Welcome to episode 165 of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. I am one half of your hosts, Mark Davis, and I am here with Quizmaster Lee Brettschneider. How are you, Lee?
What up? I'm doing great.
Okay, I'm doing fantastic. Great. I'm glad to hear it. I'm looking to you, looking at you in your little box. We're doing a Zoom.
We're in our Zoom boxes again and for this episode. It's necessary when we have a out of town guest.
Absolutely. I was going to say, and normally we don't like to do the Zoom, but when you have a guest of this caliber, when you have a guest of this this level of intensity, I'm really going to talk her up here. You got to do the Zoom.
Can I add some accolades here real quick?
Please.
About our guest?
Please.
We're talking about the person slash team with the number three most wins on our Twitch channel. 12 quizzes, a 1-5 win ratio over there, as well as the number three most players and teams defeated.
Jesus.
176 teams defeated in our quizzes.
Smote.
Mm-hmm.
We have Lisa Wolfish. How are you, Lisa?
I am well. Thank you so much for all of those kind words. I had no idea I can now, you know, claim that many, you know, dead teams in my wake.
Oh, yeah. At least that's just for our Twitch channel. That does not include Mark's trivia.
I was going to say,
so add 100.
Yeah, I don't keep track of that stuff, but a whole shit ton is definitely how I would go. Although, explaining it.
You know, Lee, I do have to apologize. You switched nights, which became a night we couldn't chime into as much. But there's some openings now, so we will be back on the Twitch show.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. And I'll let you know, we're hoping to add more nights on different nights of the week at some point as well. Yeah, we just got some live trivia that we're doing on Wednesdays and Thursdays, but of course we would like to stream more. And listeners, you might recognize Lisa as Whiskey Tango.
I was just
going to
say,
yeah, Twitch channel.
We need to let her know that we need to let everybody know that she's known more commonly as Whiskey Tango or Whiskey Tango DC.
I am one half of Whiskey Tango. I am the whiskey half. The other half Tango is upstairs, passed out somewhere.
Perfect. Right. There you go. And we would be remiss not to mention Kenya, who often teams up for you with the Zoom trivia, as well as some other trivias. How did you and Kenya end up teaming up together?
So good question. Yeah. Kenya chimes in. We all three of us have good kind of domain knowledge, and together we make a pretty good team. Kenya and I met by being paired up on another podcast that we participate in the community around that podcast. And we got teamed up for a special Women's History Month edition. It was all the ladies in the room, hosts and guests, and we crushed it and started playing online trivia together after that during COVID. Played, I think Kenya brought me into Mark's game on Wednesdays, and then we played another game out of Chicago on Tuesdays, and Kenya hosts a game as well on another night.
Jesus. Let's talk a little bit about your dominance for a moment, because anyone who's listened to the weekly wrap-up regularly, whether it be through Twitch with Lee or with the trivia that I run on Wednesdays, that you are a constant, if not winner, a battler for the top spot. You keep track of all the questions that are asked, don't you?
I keep track of how we answer. I don't necessarily write down all the questions, but I used to play on my iPad, which was difficult to kind of do the Zoom chat on the way that Mark plays online. So I would write the answers down and then we'd get them in afterwards. So I'd have all the answers written down. And I think Mark is referring to one time when he asked something and I said, wait, didn't you just ask about this, you know, 13 weeks ago? I think I might feel a little more guilty if we were actually at Nice Guys Pizza winning prizes, because it's more fun when different people win all the time like that.
Right.
You know, so I don't feel as bad just running up scores online. But, you know, as Mark has seen, it's just a crapshoot on what gets asked. You know, when it's a lot of random kind of stuff that you can flip your coin either way on. You know, we'll flip wrong as often as not. And Kenya, when Kenya's playing with us and we all try to fight for our answers that we think and how many times we each flip wrong. And she knows that I'm just kidding with her when I, you know, give her shade for flipping wrong. But we all do it as many times.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Several times on this podcast. Yeah. Mark and I will be like, you talked me out of that thing. I can't believe that.
And I got to say, Mark, you're setting me up for failure here as I am now guaranteed to not get any questions right because all of the questions I'm sure that come up are going to be in Tango's wheelhouse and not mine. So. Just setting that expectation now.
We'll see. We're looking forward to the questions that you brought as well. I know you have an abundance. We'll try to get to as many as we can. But before we get to today's quiz, how about we go over our weekly wrap-up? All right. Monday, August 23rd, we were back on Twitch for a Monday mega quiz. In third place, it was Max from Doubled Feature Podcast. Oh boy, Alberta, 256,648 points. H-Bomb and Friends back in the top three once again with 277,334 points. And their second victory, Warring Hearts, 293,934 points. Congratulations to them. On August 26th, we were back at Point Ebel Brewing Company in Fort Myers, Florida for another no-nonsense trivia challenge. The Trivia Queens came in third place with 56 points. Hot Dot in second with 69 points. Wow, that just went right past you, didn't it?
Nice.
Thank you. And Wicked Bad Bitches and Hombres winning the quiz with 80 points. And then on Thursday, August 26th, we were at Ollie's Pub in Cape Coral. Death Stars are the best stars in third place, 79 points to them. Mark, your team, Covidio killed the radio star. Reference maybe to your Buggles reference on the latest episode of Lyrics to Go?
Could be. That could have been on the mind. Episode. I would say it was Seth.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Great trivia knowledge dropped on that podcast, by the way, about They Might Be Giants lyrics.
Thank you.
Really just a lot of great insights on that podcast. Can't recommend it enough. Lyrics to Go.
I appreciate it.
You guys got 114 points. That was you and Seth and Jamie. And just beaten by the bar team by a single point. Just the tips, 115 points.
Are you going to mention
so
it?
So close.
Are you going to mention Mr. Johns? About how Mr. I Tizek? Blew how I blew the flag question for the art round.
Oh, that one. Jasper no, I wasn't Johns. I wasn't going to bring that up, but yes,
I asked you on this very podcast.
Mm-hmm. Artist Jasper Johns is known for painting what iconic symbol or something along those lines is what you asked.
Yeah, I think Jamie had gotten a handle on that page first and kind of went through. Mm-hmm.
This was a modern arts bonus round, by the way, and the answer is flag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a bunch of artists and a bunch of pieces of art and matching the artist with a famous piece of art, and Jamie had filled a bunch out, and then it was just kind of like chaos from there, and I didn't even have my wits about me to realize that Jasper Johns was that guy.
I did a Patrick Stewart style quadruple take.
Yeah, that was
when I saw that answer.
That was a big one.
Yes, so close. Maybe next time though, Mark. How did your teams go? How did your trivia go on Wednesday at Nice Guys Pizza?
It went well. I don't even have my thing up. I'm still writing questions. I realized while I was at breakfast, I was like, you know what? Lisa was at my trivia, and so she's going to know the answers to everything I'm going to ask. I do know that Lisa won the whole night along with her better half with a whopping 83 points.
Woo, wow, that is a high score for Mark's trivia.
Indeed, but the sweep went to the team Gubernaculum, who they had come...
Nice name.
Yes, indeed, the Gubernaculum, with 21 points in the first round, 39 points in the second round, 67 points in the third round, but, of course, Whiskey Tango with 83 points winning the whole night.
And that's an example where that final question was all Tango. That was his 20 points.
Oh, okay. Go.
I would have bet one and come up with the wrong answer.
All right. Well, If you missed it and you want to join us in the following weeks, you got a few opportunities to do so. This Wednesday, September 1st, we're at Pointy Bell Brewing Company in Fort Myers, Florida for our 336th pub quiz. We are going to be asking questions based on your category requests. Join us for your opportunity to win some free beer and suggest categories for next week's quiz. That's at Pointy Bell on Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. On Thursday, September 2nd, we're at Ollie's Pub in Cape Coral for no-nonsense trivia challenge number 347. That starts at 7:30 p.m. We hope you can join us for a general knowledge quiz also based on your category requests. Prizes include gift cards, which can be spent on records, beer, or whatever else you can find for sale at Ollie's Pub in Cape Coral. That's Thursday, September 2nd at 7:30 p.m. And then Monday, September 6th, we're back on Twitch streaming a virtual pub mega quiz based on your category requests. You guessed it. Join us for a 90-minute quiz, multiple choice. It will include audio and visual rounds. Thanks to everybody who came out and checked out the Kylian Trivia Charades. It was a big hit. We're going to post a video of that on our YouTube channel soon, so check that out. But we will be back again on Twitch September 6th, Monday, twitch.tv/no-nonsense-trivia. And, of course, every week in Cape Coral, you can play Mark's Trivia on Wednesdays at Nice Guys Pizza, or you can face off against Whiskey Tango on Zoom starting at 8 p.m. And please don't forget to follow No Nonsense Trivia on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Reddit. And join us on our Discord server to stay updated on all of our podcasts, streams, and events. Join us.
Won't you? Okay.
All right. Zoom just asked me, okay. Playing music? Set up professional audio.
Not really, no. Not really playing music.
We're done playing the music, Zoom. Indeed. Thank you.
Thank you. Too late. Take a quick break. Come back.
Let's do that.
I'm very excited to team up with Whiskey and answer some trivia and get some of her questions and get inside the mind of a killer.
Trivia Slayer. 176. Pretty impressive.
Indeed.
We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. My first question for y'all is about fanzines, music fanzines.
Okay.
Lisa, are you a music fan? Is that one of your domains?
If the music is pre-1990, yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. So that's why it's good to have a well-rounded team, you know? Even if you have two people that are into the same domain, they sometimes can specialize in different subcategories and sub-subcategories, as we used to say, as we sometimes say.
As we used to, we don't anymore.
Well, I think it's been a while since we dropped a sub-subcategory.
It's true, or a sub-sub-subcategory. We're coming back to...
This is definitely a sub-sub-subcategory.
Okay. Music fanzines. Y'all are making me hungry. Subs.
Backstreets. Not only a place where you can find Mark Davis playing drums in... Karaoke Against the Machine?
Rage Against the Karaoke Machine.
Rage Against the... I'm sorry.
You sound like an old man. Rage Against
the Karaoke. It's called Karaoke Against the Machine? Is that what it's called, son? Not only a bar where you can see Mark and play with Mark, you can do karaoke, live karaoke with Mark. Mm-hmm. That's the first Monday of every month.
It is.
Right? Yeah. Backstreets was a quarterly fanzine and website that covers the music of which popular musical act and similar artists.
Mark, I do actually know this one.
Can I hear the question one more time?
Absolutely. Backstreets was a quarterly fanzine and website that covers the music of which popular musical act and similar artists.
You know this, huh?
I do know this.
Well, and website. Yeah. So it has to be a newer band.
I use the website frequently, actually.
Really?
Oh,
interesting. Really?
I'll tell you some stories.
let me help Mark along. I'll ask the full question that I asked live, but I thought you guys might have an inkling towards this.
I mean, my guess is Backstreet Boys.
I left off a hint. Here's the full question, Mark. Backstreets was a quarterly fanzine and website that covers the music of which popular musical act and similar artists since 1980. Backstreet Boys not looking so good now, is it?
No, they're not.
So you can have a harder version of this question and an easier version.
Backstreets.
I didn't realize it just started in 80, but I guess that makes sense.
Who do you think it is?
If I'm right. So I go to Backstreets to get playlists from Bruce Springsteen concerts. I've been to see Springsteen probably 7 or 8 times with my sister, saw him on Broadway, Springsteen fan. So, I know Backstreets as, the Springsteen fan site. You can buy and sell tickets. You can see, you know, concert reviews, all that. So
with the E Street band, that would make sense.
Yeah. So I'm going with, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street band on this one.
Bruce.
It is indeed Bruce Springsteen. Yes. That's correct. Yes, a song, Backstreets from Born to Run,
which
was released in 1975.
Yes. What a great song.
As Lisa mentioned, the website seems active, but as far as I could tell, the last issue of the fanzine appears to be Backstreets number 91 from Fall and Winter in 2013. Do you know if that's true, Lisa?
I didn't actually know that it started as some kind of... printed product, if that's, you know,
yeah,
back then probably was. I've only ever used the website.
It was like a 4-page tabloid newspaper style fanzine. Eventually moved into a magazine format, I think. But
they're really great with reporting on the shows and set lists, because if they were playing multiple times in a city, you could see the review of the first night if you were going to the second night. So did that a lot. Do not think that they will be touring anytime soon, though, unfortunately.
My mom went and saw him. My mom was obsessed with Bruce Springsteen, and with good reason. She got to see him in the 1980s. Clarence Clemens and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him, the Born in the USA tour. I mean, I've seen him several times recently since 2010. Saw him twice at the arena in D.C. Damn. Went with my sister, saw him in Hartford, in Albany. It's one of our things we do.
All right. Awesome. Here you go. This one might be a little softball one. We'll see how it goes.
Thank you, Quiz Daddy.
You're welcome, Quiz Baby. Bob Dole was the senator of what state prior to running for president in 1996?
Ooh. Bob Dole. So where is Bob Dole from?
I'm in Washington.
Yes.
So politics are pretty well known. I actually met Bob Dole once. Not when he was in the Senate, but Bob Dole would go and meet all of the honor flights of the aging veterans who would come to D.C., the World War II veterans, and they would come on these honor flights, usually into Baltimore, for example, and then come down to the World War II Memorial in D.C. And Bob Dole was there meeting every single group of World War II veterans that came in. And I had a cousin who came in on one of those flights, and we also went down to meet him there and met Bob Dole as he was greeting each one. He greeted, thanked for the service and whatnot. So I do actually know this one as well.
Okay. So. And interestingly, this is our second episode in a row where our guest has met a politician.
There you go.
Because Aaron last week talked about meeting John Edward, right? Edwards. No S on Edward? Edwards. I'm
John
not going
to
get those right.
The guy who talks to people. Yeah,
and right.
The beyond.
My guess, Lisa, was California?
No.
Okay,
no,
I have no
sorry.
Idea then.
Sorry,
it's all good. No. No. Yeah. What do you got?
Bob Dole, I think we should go with the answer of Kansas.
Kansas. Okay, I'm going to yield to Lisa here. Kansas is our guest.
She's killing it. Kansas is correct.
All right. I would have never guessed that.
It's kind of a strange state.
Clark Kent and Bob Dole. That's what I know. And the band Kansas, maybe? Are they? They're probably not even from there.
Kansas is probably from Kansas. I don't know. I'll look at that while Lisa asks her question.
Is that U.S. state appropriation? If you name your band Kansas and you're actually from New York?
How dare you? All right, Lisa.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go, I think, with this one. Okay. The category is power brokers. Mm-hmm. Who is ranked number one on the 2020 Forbes list of most powerful women in the world?
I'm going to guess that it's the CEO of Facebook, Mark, whose name is... Wait. Is it Sheryl Sanders? Is that her name? Susan Sanders?
Oh, Colonel Sanders?
No. It might not be Sanders.
Kansas is from Kansas, by the way. Topeka. Whew.
All right, you guys are safe for now.
Don't have to call them out on this appropriation.
You guys are safe for now.
Oh, I'd hate to.
We're
going to
keep digging in, though.
I'd hate to do it to them. Carry on my wayward
son. See how those Icarus wings hold up. Born of wings of steel. Could it be Melinda Gates?
Cheryl might be Sanders? Most powerful woman of the world.
According to this
the
list.
The world.
And you said 2020, right? Forbes 2020?
2020. Yeah, I don't think the 2021 list is out yet.
Right.
I mean, that's CEO
Kim
of
Kim Kardashian?
Donda or Donda released today.
I don't care.
Yeah. I heard one song that was all right. I mean, you know,
is
I just
keep Cheryl Sanders from Facebook. Do you know?
I don't know. I didn't. Whenever I think of Facebook, I think of what's his face?
Mark Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg. Okay.
I think he's moved over into a different position.
I'm sure.
And she's CEO. He's like an advisory.
Right.
You know, guy. He's not running the day-to-day business, but everything's got to be run past him, probably.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of other...
She's the COO, actually, I'll just tell you.
COO, okay. And I think I'm thinking of Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I don't think her name is Cheryl Sanders. I think it's a double S name, though. But I don't know if that's the answer or not.
Yeah. Trying to think of other... Most successful?
Powerful.
Powerful. To have that power.
The list of most powerful women in the world.
Maybe it is Melinda Gates. I mean, money-wise.
Got a lot of money.
Forbes is financial, mainly.
Yeah.
Right?
And especially
so
with
when
that,
they're talking about power, they're going to be talking about money.
When did her and Bill get divorced?
This year.
Oh, separated.
And Jeff Bezos and his wife got separated.
Mackenzie.
Last year.
Not Elizabeth Merkel. I don't think. Michelle Obama.
Angela Merkel,
that's it. I mean, Melinda Gates is as good a guess as any.
Let's go with it.
We're going to go with Melinda Gates.
Melinda Gates is our guess.
Hey, I'm sorry, that is incorrect. So pretty much everyone you said is on the list, and you were thinking of Sheryl Sandberg, the COO of Facebook.
Oh, thank you.
Melinda Gates is number 5 on the list.
Nothing to sneeze at.
I haven't scrolled far enough to see Michelle Obama on the list, but number 1 is Angela Merkel.
Oh, holy shit.
Oh, all right. So nice pull, Mark.
Damn.
It says
shouldn't have doubted
Merkel
her.
Merkel became the first female chancellor of Germany in 2005. She's serving in her fourth term.
Jesus.
She's the default leader of Europe, leading the largest economy.
That makes a lot of sense.
Should have stuck with it. God damn.
Well, we started going down the financial thing, you know, but I guess Forbes maybe, you know, did not include, they use that nuance for a reason. They said powerful for a reason.
It said, so she's the de facto leader of Europe, leading the region's largest economy after steering Germany through financial crisis and back to growth.
When I mentioned her to you, you had no facial expression change, Lee. And I was like, all right, so this is stupid. I kind of did the self-deprecating.
Oh, yeah. Like, I guess I was just, I was still sorting out the financial thing. Like,
I was like, all right, well. Guess not.
All right, I'll take the brunt of that one.
Oh, I mean, I wasn't forceful about it.
My next category for y'all is dog breeds. The first dog movie star, Blair, who famously starred in the 1905 short film Rescued by Rover, was of what breed? Blair, the first dog movie star, was what breed of dog?
So I don't know offhand. Okay. I mean, I would think, you know, rescue St. Bernards are known for rescues. I don't, you know, the whole Lassie myth around collies and Jimmy's in the well and all that. Collies are pretty popular. I have no in on this otherwise.
Can we hear one more time?
Yes. The first dog movie star, Blair, who famously starred in the 1905 short film Rescued by Rover, was of what breed?
They could have been doing some kind of Klondike thing. That might have been popular back then.
Rescued by Rover, though. When you think of a dog named Rover, I don't think of a St. Bernard as a dog named Rover. You know what I mean? Like, I think that maybe Rescued by Rover may have been like a more of like a Lassie thing of like a yelping dog letting someone know.
Or maybe it was one of these, you know, the dog saves the damsel on the train tracks or something.
Like
that seems to be a, you know, an image you get from that time frame.
May sound weird, but when I think of Rover, I think of maybe like a Jack Russell Terrier. Something like that. I don't know if going by the name is a right thing, but I just feel like there are certain kinds of names that work with certain kinds of dogs, and Rover, I feel, is kind of like a...
Maybe, I mean, the other ones, I think, like Rin Tin Tin, I think, was a German Shepherd. Lassie was a Collie. Maybe first using this breed led them to say, hey, this breed is good on film, maybe we should do more.
Yeah, I'd be fine with doing any of those.
To me, it's all one's as good as the next. So I don't know. I mean, German Shepherds have always been popular. Collies are popular. Golden Retrievers are popular. If it's something in the Klondike, maybe it was a, you know, what are those sled dogs? Huskies.
Oh, yeah. Let's go with Rover.
I mean, we could try Husky if it was some kind of like... You know, I mean, that was the era, right? Jack London and all the dog sled stories that he wrote.
And Cool Runnings. All those dog sled. Oh, that's Bob's sled.
I mean, that's the only thing I'm thinking is that. That was a popular time for those sort of Alaska stories.
It's called Rescued by Rover. And can I hear the question one more time?
The first dog movie star, Blair, who famously starred in the 1905 short film Rescued by Rover, was of what breed?
Eh. ever since you said something, I keep picturing like a woman being bound on railroad tracks and a dog untying her.
Yeah.
I don't know why I have that.
I can go either way. Like I said, I think both of those seem to kind of be callbacks to that era.
Let's go with not with a collie, I don't think, but what was the other one you mentioned? German Shepherd?
German Shepherd.
Let's go with
or Golden Retriever. Let's go Retriever. With
a German Shepherd.
German Shepherd? All right, we'll go German Shepherd.
Wrong.
No, I'm sorry. The answer is collie. God
damn it.
Collie, yes.
God damn it.
All right, we were barking around it.
Yeah, pardon the pun. Barking up the right tree. From IMDb Trivia. Owned by British film pioneer Cecil Hepworth, who starred his dog in Rescued by Rover, a hugely popular short film shot in 1905. The film was so in demand for showings that several reprints had to be made, as copies of the original negatives wore out quickly. Rover quickly became a popular name for dogs both in the UK and in America. So this is the namesake, actually, but of the what was dog
the
name.
What was the rescue?
The rescue was kidnapped baby. So they were like, oh my gosh, this is just an adorable combo, this collie and this baby. And IMDb trivia actually doesn't even go far enough here. It says that the original negatives had to be reprinted. The film had to be reshot twice, actually, because the negatives burned out. So they just reshot Jesus. It twice. And on one of these, two professional actors were paid to appear, and the film is cited as the first film ever to have used paid actors.
That's interesting.
So some other trivia surrounding that movie as well. Blair.
Did the dog at least get some biscuits, maybe?
I hope so. Nobody was reporting on that, unfortunately, but we hope so. I mean, the first dog movie star, you have to imagine that they probably treated that dog pretty okay.
All right. Here's the next question from me. Who are the three tenors?
What Luciano are the names of the Pavarotti. Three tenors?
I mean, they change, right?
Do
they? I thought they changed, because if there are three tenors now, one of them's not Pavarotti.
Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't expect them to still be a group. I thought that like they had died off and they were done, but there was...
They were a specific singing group.
Yeah. Carreras. I think there was one named Carreras, something like that. Pavarotti
Carreras,
and the other guy.
Gibb. Andy Gibb. No. Pavarotti.
I think the opera singers I'm thinking of are, I mean, there's Placido Domingo, but I don't remember what era he was.
It might be him.
It might be.
I mean, he was very popular.
I'd be hard pressed to name another opera singer guy.
Same. Did Orson Welles sing? He's got the body type. He looks like he could bellow out a note.
He didn't. I don't think he did.
Yeah, so, Mark, we're going to go with Pavarotti, Domingo, and one more time, Lisa?
I think it's like Carreras is the closest I'll come.
Carreras.
That's correct. Wow. Hey! Way to pull it out. Jose Carreras and Placido Domingo, both question. Spaniards, and Lisa. Luciano Pavarotti from Italy.
Coming in clutch.
There she goes.
Wow. All right.
Oh. All
right, Lisa.
My turn. Okay.
Your turn.
Let's see. I got to choose one here. Okay. Let's go with this, because I am confident in you guys on this one. Okay. Don't say that. What company's mascot, based on an iconic object first sold in 1937 by a different company, is named Luxo Jr.?
Okay.
What?
Luxo
I'm
Jr.
I'm confident you guys got this one.
Mm-hmm. One more time.
What company's mascot, based on an iconic object first sold in 1937 by a different company, is named Luxo Jr.?
Mark? I think the answer might be sitting right in front of my face, actually. See, I got one of these arms here.
Mm-hmm.
These things. And then you combine it with one of these things. You have a clamp arm or a spring arm desk lamp. Now, where do you recognize that as being a mascot from?
Pixar?
That's what I think we're going with. I think Luxo Jr. is the name of that little lamp that goes and jumps on the eye and then goes, it looks at the camera right before the logo fades. That's what I think.
How sure are you of this?
I'm like 100% sure.
Okay, we're going to go with Pixar.
That is correct. Woo! Yeah.
I just wanted to play it up a little bit for our listeners to think about it, you know, in case they weren't.
Oh, right no, away. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, I was, okay. Yeah, I had no clue.
I did not know that the 1937 thing, I guess that makes sense timeline-wise for...
So that's when the Luxo lamp was first designed and sold. They've sold 25 million Luxo lamps since it was first offered. And so there was the Pixar short that featured Luxo Jr. and the larger Luxo lamp. Shorts if you've never seen them. I don't remember the order. There was Tintoy, there was Luxo Jr.
I think Tintoy might have been the first
one. Red Day Out. There were a bunch of them. You can check them all out. But interestingly, when I was looking up this question, I read that Pixar was going to sell a plush version of Luxo Jr. And that's when the company that owns the Luxo trademark stepped in and said, no, you can't do that. And they had to negotiate that they could still use the name Luxo Jr. for the mascot, but they can't sell anything
of that object.
Yeah.
Wow.
Huh. So,
that makes sense.
Pixar history.
Yeah, I did not know that Luxo was the name of the lamp originally, like the name of the product.
That's what it's called, a Luxo lamp.
All right.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Are you ready to take a break?
Yeah. Let's take a little break.
Take a break. Then we'll come back with some miscorrections.
Mark, do we have miscorrections?
Oh, boy.
We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and it's time for some missed corrections.
Miscorrections.
All right. First up, we got a bit of a no-note here. This is from Z1Pod on Twitter, because Kelly Madden from the Drunk Theory podcast recommended us on Twitter to a random listener, and they responded, "Listened and enjoyed. Well done, lads. Two great quiz host voices," or as you mentioned in the latest episode, morning radio voices. Yeah. "I wasn't too hot on the USA-based questions, but when it came to the UK themes, I was all over them." Thank you for reaching out, Zen One Pod, and for the compliments there. We also heard from Adam from Death Stars of the Best Stars on Discord, a bit of a no-note here. "I couldn't find anything definitive, but consommé in Spanish means chicken soup. But I'm going to assume it comes from the French cuisine term consommé, which is a clarified broth traditionally created using whipped egg whites to remove the fat." There's a trivia question there, but now everyone here knows it. Thanks for that effort, Adam. Don't forget, you can always turn that into a Rate My Question if you want to send in something like that. We'll get to the contact for that in just a moment. Nabil wrote in saying, "Lee, you were looking for Claire de Lune when I started singing humming the Debussy song, and I couldn't recall the title in the last episode." And Mark, you were wondering if Marvel's Hercules was a god or not a god. At least in Marvel Comics, he is considered a god in Marvel Comics because he was given immortality by Zeus after death and made the god of strength. I'm not sure if there's any real life mythology associated with that. Do you know, Lisa?
I don't know. I thought he was a demigod. I thought like all the, not all, but
because he's a half son, right?
Children of Zeus were demigods. Yeah.
I always, in trivia questions, I like to refer to him as a mythical figure kind of gets around that. But yes, as far as Marvel Comics goes, he is made the god of strength by Zeus in that, because Zeus pities him after death. And what else do we have here?
He's a Demi Moore.
What's that?
He's a Demi Moore.
Good one. Mentioned her on the last episode, too.
There you go.
We're just doing the same thing over and over again. And Mark, I just want to make a small correction. You referred to the Guinness Book of World Records in the last episode. They're no longer called the Guinness Book of World Records. They dropped book from the organizational name in the year 2000. So it's just Guinness World Records at this point.
Sorry.
We were also guessing about K7 being in Europe, you know, one of the tallest mountains in Europe. Mm-hmm. But the K series in general is not in Europe at all. They're named after Karakoram, the mountain range that spans the border of China, India, and Pakistan, as well as extending to Afghanistan and Tajikistan. So no K's in Europe. If you're looking for tall mountains, stay away from the K's. That's an Asian thing. And Seth wanted to let us know that a mandrake is indeed a real plant. It does not, you know, sing or anything like that, but it is, according to, I think this is from Wikipedia, mandrake is the root of a plant historically derived either from the plants of the genus Mandragora, found in the Mediterranean region, or from other species, the English mandrake, which have similar properties. The plants from which the root is obtained are also called mandrakes.
Well, hot damn.
It's a lot to take in.
It is.
You got anything?
Just sit here for a minute. No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, that's it.
I do have a question.
Well, let's just close this out real
please.
Quick.
Please, do your thing.
If you'd like to write us with a missed correction, a rate my question, or even just a little no-note, you can write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or call us, please, at 1-929-356-6966 or find us on social media. Mark.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
Lisa? How about you, Lisa? Are you ready?
I am ready.
We're ready.
What animated character is known in France and other Francophone countries as Musclor?
Musclor?
M-U-S-C-L-O-R. What animated character is known in France and other Francophone countries as Musclor?
Musk. Could that be Mouse? Could it be Mickey Mouse?
Well, M-U-S, we've heard before, is
Musculid?
Latin for mouse, right?
I think so. That would make sense. As far as like our, you know, word mouse that we use, being derivative of that.
Mickey Mouse, I don't know about that, because I would think that would be some local name.
Right, like everybody around the world knows the character as Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. There's Mighty Mouse. What animated mice are there?
Jerry from Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Musclor.
And
Stuart Little.
I don't think the question said like motion animation versus just in print or comics, right?
Well, typically animation means to give life to. So if you're using animated to say like a static character, like from like a comic strip, that would be an improper use of animation.
Okay. Right? All right. I didn't remember if it said animation or not. Okay.
That's what you said, right? Animated character. Okay.
Okay, so that takes us back to, Jerry. I mean, that makes sense, because it's like a single name.
Speedy Gonzalez? I mean, I'm not opposed to going with Jerry. Yeah. I'm just trying to suss some more.
I don't, I'm trying to think of other animated mice figures.
What would lore be? Story? I mean, that's, I'm thinking, I guess, of a very literal translation of that word.
Or.
Oh, Musclor. Clor.
Yeah, C-L-O-R. Yeah. Like chloroform, something that knocks out.
Mighty Mouse.
That takes me back to Mighty Mouse.
Yeah, because he's powerful.
Although, I don't... Is that how you spell chloroform? C-L-O-R? Yeah.
I thought there might be an H in there.
There might be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But, I mean, Mouse is dropping some vowels. You know, it could still have a similar root phonetically. Yeah. I like Mighty Mouse.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in absence of knowing anything else, I think that's a good guess.
You want to go with it?
Let's go with it.
Mighty Mouse.
Sorry, that's incorrect.
Ah, he did not come to save the day.
Oh.
Dun, 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 dun. It's a character that's alternate personality is known as Prince Adam. It is He-Man.
So, all right. I threw us off there.
Musclor.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. Muscles. Because of his large muscles.
See,
muscles.
That's the same root. See? Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Same root. But is his name Musclor or is it Musclor?
I'm not positive, but I mean, it's M-U-S-C-L-O-R.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, you don't say muscles for real.
Yeah, could be Musclor, right. But
Musclor.
I'm just going by what I saw.
I might have thought muscles if you pronounced it that way. I'm just saying. Just saying.
Yeah, Mark, understood. It's your fault we got it wrong.
Definitely. I would have gotten that.
I also looked up chloroform to see if it's spelled with an H, and there is a band called Chloroform, which is... a very weird thing to call your team, your band. Chloroform is spelled with an H as far as the drug, but there's a band called Chloroform without the H, and they look weird.
I suck at spelling.
Okay,
Lee.
Animals is my next category. Not mice, not He-Man, other animals. Due to pressure buildup from long periods of dilation during the dark winter months, what mammal is the only whose eyes turn from gold in warmer seasons to blue in the winter? Due to pressure buildup from long periods of dilation during the dark winter months, what mammal is the only whose eyes turn from gold in the warmer seasons to blue in the winter?
So I'm thinking... something that where there is lots of darkness in the winter. So something either something more of a polar region or northern or very southern region.
I was thinking the same thing, like Alaska, like that kind of thing, like somewhere with like 40 days of night.
And you got penguins in the south. You got the polar bears in the north. Other sorts of aquatic walruses, seals,
walry, eli. Yeah, I mean, it's a crapshoot. Yeah. Polar bear is a pretty good guess.
Bees. I don't know if hibernation has an effect with bears, but I would, there'd have to be a drastic enough presence of darkness to make a difference.
Right. That'd be pretty extreme, I guess.
I don't know that dilating for a couple hours a day might have an effect. I mean, it could, but I'd go with something more extreme.
Right. Where did the movie, is it 40 Days of Night? That takes place in Alaska, right?
That one I don't know, actually.
About the vampires that go to a town so they can, like, be out for a long time. Got, don't have to worry about.
You got caribou, who are fairly northern. I mean, even in Sweden... it gets, they have daylight in the winter, you know, maybe from 10 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon. So not a lot of, even in that zone, you know, it's not Arctic, but it's fairly northern.
Yeah, something else to consider here is that they are the only mammal that does this, which means either there's something special about them or they're the only mammal there. And I mean, like, are there any other mammals like around polar bears?
I mean, they eat walruses, right? They eat seals.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a difference, you know, being in the water.
And like snowy rabbits.
Yeah, that's a good thing too. What are snow is that? Hairs. What they're called? I don't remember something what like those are hungry. Called.
Snow bunnies.
Snow bunnies. I mean, in the South, I think it's like the you know, penguins. I don't know anything down there other than seals also.
Well,
polar bears are size, you know, they're certainly the largest animal up there.
And they're very predatory.
They have to hunt. I mean, well, most animals do, but they.
Yeah, I think maybe polar bears feels good.
I mean, it's. I'm trying to think of pictures of polar bears, and it's said they have the blue eyes in the darkness or the blue eyes in the summer.
The blue eyes are in the winter. Golden eyes, amber eyes in the summer.
Well, that makes all the difference. I was thinking the other way around.
Amber is the color of the polar bear.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay going with that.
We're gonna say polar bear.
Wrong.
No, I'm sorry. Lisa did run over it once, I think at least. Reindeer or caribou is the answer. So they have this like shiny layer in their behind the retina. And when it starts to get darker out, the pressure squeezes fluid out of the tapetum lucidum, which is formed mostly of collagen fibers. This is according to the Natural History Museum in the UK. As a result, the fibers pack together more tightly and start to reflect blue wavelengths of light instead of yellow. The blue eyes become over 1,000 times more sensitive to light than the yellow summer ones, making reindeer vision perfectly adapted to its unforgiving habitat. So it's not a hunting thing. It's a fleeing thing, a prey thing, you know, I guess to help keep them from. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if polar bears eat caribou.
And this just naturally happens with them for whatever reason.
Yep. It is a unique feature of them to make them worthy of our trivia.
That's good because they need that solid vision around Christmas.
Yeah, you got it. The aim is important. You don't want to be up there, you know, not seeing what house you're landing on.
Some fat guy on a sled behind you.
Wrong house.
All right, Lisa, it's time.
Okay.
Make us pay.
Okay. Movies. And
yay.
Yeah. Okay.
My domain.
Movies
and yeah.
Okay. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association liked Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross of Nine Inch Nails, giving them a Golden Globe for their score of what 2010 film?
Nine Inch Nails, Atticus Ross.
I thought she was going to ask about the TV show because I knew that was Watchmen.
Oh.
That was good, Watchmen.
Oh, it was great. Loved it.
Yeah.
I was just listening to a podcast and it's from a while ago and they were watching the series as it was going and they were all talking about like the fourth episode and they were like, like I'm not sold and I'm just like sitting there like knowing the future.
That was going, me like, on our podcast, Mark. You asked me.
Exactly. Well, no, this is another podcast.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Right. So it's I was like, just stick with it. And then like a couple of episodes, they were like, fucking great. Mm-hmm. Like, I know.
I wonder if there's just something about maybe the pacing of those earlier episodes that is. Yeah. You need to.
It's all build up, baby. Mm-hmm. You got to be in it for the payoff.
You had to let the story unfold. You had to be okay not knowing what was going on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You had to trust it.
Yep.
You enter
trust the process
in media res in the midst of things. Yeah.
2010 film. Do you know this?
Watchmen's not a bad guess, but I was thinking of
it's not Watchmen because it's a movie,
right? No, did they not work on the score of the Zack Snyder film? I thought maybe.
I don't think so. Maybe they did.
No,
Let me read it again. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association liked Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross of Nine Inch Nails, giving them a Golden Globe for their score of what 2010 film?
Yeah, I'm thinking of two projects that were headed up by their future collaborator on House of Cards, David Fincher. I'm not sure that they did all of the music on House of Cards, but I think they had some involvement in the score of that. Before that, they had collaborated, I believe, on The Social Network and Zodiac. So those are the two movies. Now, The Social Network got a ton of accolades as far as like its production goes. I don't know if you remember that. So I'm leaning towards that. I'm not sure if that was 2010.
I think Social Network is right.
Yeah. I remember that the trailer for that movie had like a chorus and stuff in it. It was like pretty big on the music.
Yeah. You want to go with Social Network?
Yes.
That's a good poll. We're going to say Social Network.
That is correct.
All right.
Yeah. There he is.
Great question.
Yeah. Thanks. Fantastic question.
Big Nine Inch Nails fan.
Trent Reznor almost has an EGOT.
Mm-hmm. Just needs that Tony, right?
Mm-hmm. He's got an ego. Wouldn't tell me about it. Right? Hey-o. Here's your next question. From moi. Where is the world's largest meteor crater?
Now, when you say where, Mark, does that mean that we can say planet Earth?
I was trying to think of this is a question that I was working on.
Oh yeah, you're writing on the fly here, right?
I'll ask you what continent.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll even say that the name of the crater is the Vredefort crater. Vredefort. The Vredefort crater. The largest meteor crater in the world is on which continent?
So I wonder if, I mean, saying on which continent, I know if craters that might not be like fully visible. I mean, there's the impact from whatever it was that killed the dinosaurs off. Mm-hmm. That had to have been really big. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's not visible on a continent, right? Because it's underwater and all of that somewhere over the Yucatan. There are a lot of craters that hit in Russia. In that area.
I was going to say Vredefort sounds almost Russian to me. I think Northern Hemisphere probably, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would think
so. That's more
so.
Likely for the biggest crater. If it's in the southern, I imagine the angle might dink it.
I mean, Asia is certainly playing the odds for land area.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yep. My first thought was North America and maybe even, I mean, before he said continent, I was thinking Mexico maybe. But now that he's given us the name, I think Europe or Asia.
I don't know what the crater was from that fireball from the early 1900s over Russia. Maybe it's that.
Yeah.
I'm good going with Asia.
Asia is our guess.
I mean, we got more to think about.
I feel good about.
Sorry, that's incorrect.
What?
I said that's incorrect.
Oh, thank you.
Are you sure? Welcome.
I'm positive. It was 99 to 186 miles across when it was formed. The crater is calculated to be 2.023 billion years old, with the impact being in the Paleo-Proterozoic era. It is the second oldest known crater on Earth after Yarrabubba crater, and it is located in South Africa. South Africa.
Just totally off on our sus there.
It is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. okay. And for its geological interests.
In my mind, too, I was thinking like Africa, and I was like, no, not everything has to come from Africa, Lee. I mean, it's just such a natural, you know, I guess, place to go with a sus of like where things originate from. But
that's a good one.
Yeah. And did you say it was in the country of South Africa or just in Southern Africa?
It's in the country of South Africa.
Okay. Right on.
There you go.
All right. I have a literature question prepared for
Hit me.
My second question of the second round.
Suck it to me.
Philip Pullman's trilogy of novels titled His Dark Materials, as well as the corresponding HBO television adaptation, gets its name from what 17th century epic poem? Philip Pullman's trilogy of novels titled His Dark Materials, as well as the television adaptation, gets its name from what 17th century epic poem?
The only epic poem I know is the Odyssey.
That's a good question.
Thank you.
I watched the show. Unfortunately, they didn't talk about it, I don't think. So epic poems. There's this is where my recall is gonna hurt me. This is where I need Tango. But it's, I think I'm thinking of things that are earlier anyway. It's too.
Could it be The Raven? No, that's 1990.
It's, I mean, it's too early for anything from Jonathan Swift. I think it's too late for the Norse. With the hero.
Beowulf.
Beowulf, thank you.
Oh, at least I was able to answer that for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think it's too late for that.
Well, I mean, think of His Dark Materials. Yeah. Like, that just sounds like some magician shit or some shit.
I wonder if it's something like Inferno or one of those hellscape
Inferno
sort of things.
Ooh. What about that one? What about Dante's Inferno? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay. What about that?
There's Inferno.
I think you said Inferno, but I always hear it as Dante's Inferno.
You said epic poem. There's the Milton ones also, Paradise Lost.
Maybe it's Casey at Bat. It's a pretty epic poem.
Maybe.
I think that came a little later in the 17th century.
I would keep thinking though.
if I were you, I would suggest to not go with that answer.
Mudtown.
No joy in Mudville.
Mudville, Stark. Sorry.
I mean, maybe like something about alchemy. I know. I'm pretty sure it's like a whole allegory on Catholic Church type stuff. That book, and like control and stuff like that. You know, that kind of society, like the magistrate being in control.
Right. All of his dark materials.
The magisterium. I think that's also when was like The Miller's Tale and all of those. I think those were earlier, maybe.
I have no idea.
The Canterbury Tales. I think those were earlier. Oh. I don't think I'd call those poems. Maybe. We could go with Inferno. I think
that's probably a good guess. I mean, is there any correlation between the show and that? Because I've never seen the show.
The show is about, yeah, it's about the magisterium trying to control discoveries of going to parallel worlds, essentially. That sort of thing, and everybody has like this aura about them and how that aura works between different worlds. And please don't send in missed corrections, because I'm really trying to remember this from when I saw it a while ago. I know there's probably a lot of people who have read all the books and know a lot more about the storyline than I do. But the coolest part is that everybody had this little animal demon that accompanied them everywhere. And I thought, I would like one of those.
Hell yeah.
They came in really, really handy.
Sly.
I'll take one of those, please.
Yeah.
All right, let's go with Inferno.
Wrong. No, I'm sorry. You guys were on the right track, though. It is indeed John Milton's Paradise Lost. Paradise Lost, which chronicles the planning, Satan's planning of original sin, basically, to get revenge on the humans.
Another bad coin flip there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the lines here from book 2, lines 9, 10 to 19 in Paradise Lost: into this wild abyss, the womb of nature, and perhaps her grave, of neither sea nor shore nor air nor fire, but all these in their pregnant causes mix confusedly, and which thus must ever fight, unless the Almighty Maker them ordain his dark materials to create more worlds. Into this wild abyss, the wary fiend stood on the brink of hell and looked a while, pondering his voyage. So the otherworldly influence into what you were describing with the show's plot, Lisa, of, you know, the magistrate trying to prevent people from going into the other worlds. In the stories by Philip Pullman, his dark materials are literal objects, the subtle knife, which can be used to like open up different portals to other worlds, as well as I think the amber looking glass and the golden compass, which was made into a movie at one point. Pullman states in an article written for the British Library, "In my own case, the trilogy I called His Dark Materials began partly with my memories of reading the poem aloud at school so many years before. As I talked to my publisher, I discovered that he too remembered studying it in the sixth form, and we sat at lunch swapping our favorite lines. And by the time we'd finished, I seemed to have agreed to write a long fantasy for young readers, which would at least partly, we hoped, evoke something of the atmosphere we both loved in Paradise Lost." And Mark, I know that you're not a huge fan of poetry, but this was also in the same article where he draws an analogy to playing music, and I thought that you might like to hear this. Pullman writes, "The experience of reading poetry aloud when you don't fully understand it is a curious and complicated one. It's like suddenly discovering that you can play the organ. Rolling swells and peals of sound, powerful rhythms and rich harmonies are at your command. And as you utter them, you begin to realize that the sound you're releasing from the words as you speak is part of the reason they're there. The sound is part of the meaning, and that part only comes alive when you speak it. So at this stage, it doesn't matter that you don't fully understand everything. You're already far, far closer to the poem than someone who sits there in silence looking up meanings and references and making assiduous notes." I just thought that was a nice sentiment, kind of drawing the art forms of poetry and music together, because I imagine when you're playing music, Mark, you would probably agree that sometimes it's not about like the notes that are supposed to be played. It's about what you're playing in the moment. Right?
Yes. Yeah. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, I'm not saying you should go inserting words into Paradise Lost to make it better, but who knows? Maybe you would.
I've had the pleasure of playing some music with your wife lately again.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited to hear what you guys are cooking up.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Excited about it. Lisa, why don't you take us home in the second round here?
Okay.
Flog us with trivia.
Uh-huh.
We've earned it at this point.
So let's see. How about this? Something I learned recently. BASE is an acronym, category sports. BASE is an acronym that stands for what four categories of fixed objects from which base jumpers jump?
Base jumping.
I asked a question about this. Mm-hmm. It was. I don't know if this was the question.
Uh-oh.
I think it might have been similar. Can I hear the question one more time?
Yeah. BASE is an acronym that stands for what four categories of fixed objects from which base jumpers jump?
BASC.
Yep. Buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Suspension?
Maybe.
Well, base jumpers, they can jump off of buildings, airplanes.
Maybe.
Is that considered, skydiving? Is that considered a base jump?
Is that a structure? You said four structures, right?
Four categories of fixed objects.
Fixed objects. So an airplane would not be a fixed object. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's out.
For that reason, mm-hmm. you're out. Buildings.
Maybe it's bridges. Maybe bridges. These bridges, yeah.
I was like, maybe bridges?
Mm-hmm. A.
Jump off of A. Of an.
No, that won't work. Oh. Yeah, it would be an. You're right. Okay, yeah. That does work. It works perfectly.
Thank you.
I admit.
Like, what? That was a question you asked me a long time ago. And comes after a word.
Are you still there,
Mark? And comes after, depending on a word that is what. And I said, begins with a vowel sound. And you're like, that's correct. It's not a vowel.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
You broke up for a second there. I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said. Oh. My internet connection dropped out. So I was like, yep. No.
Oh, it's good. Okay. That's good enough.
It's a grammar lesson.
Yep. Okay. I could use a few
of those. It was a question you asked me that was a grammar. You were trying to be sneaky on me.
Oh.
You'll hear
you know me.
Post. Yeah, you know me.
Wow. We're just, bridges. Fixed object starts with an A.
Well, hold on. Maybe B is buildings and S is suspension bridges.
Does it have to be a suspension bridge? I mean.
Base jumping.
Mm-hmm.
Base.
So it doesn't matter if we asked this question before. Clearly, we don't remember.
Yeah, this happens all the time. All right.
Well, then it'll help you for next time.
Base jumping is when you jump and you fly afterward,
and
right?
You throw your parachute, right?
Yeah. Yep. One thing I took out of the question just for brevity is they descend with a parachute.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what base jumping is. That's why I was pretty sure that's what it was.
I figured people would know that, but yeah.
So there's got to be like
objects,
mountains, mountaintops or something.
Beam jumping.
Well, another word.
Apex. Me and my homies are getting together to do some base jumping. We're going to jump off of
a stand in the air.
Skyscrapers?
Maybe
bridges,
yeah.
Skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Aero base.
At symbols.
Aero base.
I feel like A should be relatively easy.
I keep thinking like altitude, but that's not obviously a structure.
Things that are very tall.
Trees, mountains.
I wonder what the minimum space you need for a parachute to save you.
Yeah, it needs to be
that kind of.
So maybe S stands for Sequoia. It's got to be General Sherman in California. I don't even think that would be tall enough for a parachute to do anything. I don't know. We might just need to throw in the towel here and admit that we just don't know this, Mark.
Oh, I don't want to do that. I at least want to come up with answers for each.
Okay.
And you bridges, can get partial credit.
Bridges, skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm. And we need an A and an E. Extreme natural heights. Oh, no. We're failing.
See, I think some of them are tricky. Like they kind of had to like shoehorn it to get a cool acronym out.
Wow,
of it.
Wow, all right.
I will agree with you on that.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's kind of tough about it. It's like like, oh, well, we can't put mountains. So yeah, like Apex, like that kind of thing.
You or know? we can't have it be babe jumping.
Yeah,
that would just be bad. And
you
wrong.
Think it was like a backronym where they had base first and then they worked backwards to get the.
Well, you know, she said babe. That's interesting. She said babe jumping, which means
buildings and bridges. That
it probably is suspension bridge.
Oh, I was thinking of Yeah, I guess that would be it. Suspension
building, suspension bridge,
airport hangar.
I mean, it could be air something, right? Air. Fixed. Oh, what about antenna?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like a big tower. Antenna tower. Building, antenna tower, suspension bridge, and
Elon Musk.
Yeah. One of Elon Musk's tall rockets.
Electronic
Muskrat.
Electric. Everyone knows that Elon Musk is short for electronic muskrat. Elongated muskrat.
That's what it is. My bad.
I was like, electronic is not Elon.
You can make it work.
Muskrat. Oh, yeah, I will. electric tower.
No way. Electric tower?
I thought you were going to give, I thought that nod or that shake was sure. And then you go, no way.
Extreme natural points.
Okay, sure. We're going to say buildings, antenna, suspension bridge. And what was it, Lee?
Extreme natural points.
Extreme natural
points. That is a stretch.
I'm sorry, that is partially incorrect.
Okay.
So yeah, a couple of them were sort of fit in. I haven't seen where it says it's a backronym, but it definitely feels like one. Mm-hmm. So it was buildings is the B. A is the antenna, so got those. The S is for spans. Which is what there was for bridges, because again, babe jumping would not be good. And the E is for earth. That's the natural items, the cliffs, mountains, etc. So you're earth. Very close on that. And that was a tough one.
That was good, though. I like that question. That is tough. Yeah. That is a great, I would use that as a four pointer. You get a point apiece for each of those that you get right.
Oh, I'd give it like five. That. Damn.
Nicely done.
Buildings, antennas, spans, and earth. Fixed earth.
Well done. All right.
All right.
That's round two.
Mm-hmm. Now let's take a little break. Come back with a rate my question or two.
Yeah, we got two.
Ooh, and then our third round of heavy, heavy trivia.
All right, we're back, and it's time for some Rate My Questions.
Rate My Question.
That was the pangolin theme.
Oh, yeah.
First up, we have a question here from Rumpelsnailskin Mike C. Writing in with a question. Mike C. asks, what insect is known as, quote, God's little cow? Or little cow of God in the Russian and Irish languages. What insect is known as God's little cow or little cow of God in the Russian and Irish languages? I don't know Russian or Irish. I don't know how you guys are with those languages, but cow and God, those are our clues. Little, wee, Irish, a wee. Or that would be Scottish, right? That would be Scottish.
It would be Scottish.
Yeah. Do the Irish use that, though?
I'm trying to think why Irish and Russian would be using that same.
I know.
Like, is it just those two? Or is it other languages too?
Maybe just one entomologist coming from Russia to Ireland or vice versa, popularizing the name.
What about an insect would remind people of a cow?
Mm-hmm.
Dung beetle?
Because of the poo? Like a cow pie thing?
Yeah.
I don't... little cow of God. Why is it a little cow of God? Because it shits. That's why.
And of God.
It shits.
Huh.
As God designed us to do.
Yahweh.
Is it something that can be milked? Is there like a lactating insect that like produces some kind of
I have nipples, fucker.
What is it?
Can you milk me?
There's like a sack bug, right? Isn't there a sack bug?
That's what I was thinking. If there's something that some insect that produces like some kind of
a silkworm or something along those lines, a beetle,
like some kind of moths, maybe that do that. Silkworms,
mm-hmm.
Little cow of God.
Just drawing the connection to agriculture, and having some kind of boon. Like this is a natural creature that's given us some kind of boon.
I mean, is it something related to potatoes? I mean. What is?
I don't want any Ireland bugs near
and
our
Russia
potatoes.
Have in common?
Fruit flies. I hope not. I feel like it's like a producer insect, like a silkworm, or isn't there a beetle? Like lactic.
I guess part of it is it the question like a specific bug, or just like a kind of like. Beetle as opposed to a specific kind of beetle, or like millipede as opposed to a different kind of like a specific kind of millipede.
I think he's asking for a specific insect, not like a family of insects, because beetles are like the family group, you know, as well as a music group,
like a family group, death's head beetle.
Yeah, or like you said earlier, a dung beetle. Mark, I think that's the level of granularity we're looking for here.
Small cow is a calf. Young cow.
Is there anything with spots? Like, you know, that kind of cow that's got spots on it? Like, ladybugs?
The spots, I mean, that is... I'm wary of that just because not all cows are known for being spotted. You know, we have like...
No, they're not.
The oryx gave rise to the dairy cow. Like, we engineered that. And I feel like... I don't know why, but... From my time back in ancient times, I don't remember a lot of spotted cows. No, I don't know. I don't know if the spots would be the connection. I really think it's like a milking or like something that we can use from...
I mean, could it be, all right, could it be bees?
Oh.
Like milk, like producing something that
or the
humans
honey
are
is
consuming.
The milk. Like the honey is the milk. Yeah. I like that. A Dumbledore. As is the source of the wizard's name, Bumblebee. I think Dumbledore is German though, but I like that as an idea.
I mean, I don't know particular insects that, you know, squeeze out other sorts of usable things except for silk. That's the only.
Yeah. I think there's a beetle that produces some kind of milk that we use for like, it's used in like shellac. That's what it is. The shellac bug.
I also, in these kinds of questions, tend to go with something a little simpler than the question writer asking us to come up with some deep knowledge, you know, insect science.
Yep. Mark, what do you think about bumblebee? Or honeybee? Are those
Can I hear the question again?
Sure. What insect is known as God's little cow or little cow of God in the Russian and Irish languages?
I guess so.
Okay. We're going with Bumblebee.
We'll go with Bumblebee.
Let's go with it.
Lisa, I'm so sorry. The correct answer is Ladybug. You were right. All right, now you can give us the flack that you throw Kenya's way when she does it.
Oh, well, we learned something.
This is from a blog called In the Dark that Mike sent to us that says the Russian Bozya Korovka is a literal translation of the same as the Irish Buch Gokota, which means God's little cow. The more general connection with God seen in the Irish and Russian is presumably to do with the ladybug being either cute or beneficial. If you're a gardener, you will certainly appreciate the help that the ladybugs offer in eliminating aphids and other garden pests. I'm told that the cow part of the name probably comes from the spots on a ladybug, which resemble the black patches on the hides of certain breeds of cow. My apologies, Lisa. Not to make a pun, but I steered you away in the wrong direction.
Yeah, because I thought B was a logical answer too, so could have gone either way.
Lee is very sorry that he moved you off of that answer.
All right. I'm going to give this a pip. So lowercase p, capital I, lowercase b, capital S. I don't know if I'm, maybe I should give this an uppercase B. I can't tell if I'm being salty because I didn't pick up on the spotted cow thing.
I think you might like be a Lisa little bit. Did,
but I'm going to give this basically a PIBS. Bugs, animals, pretty popular category for us. It is interesting for sure. And there are some hints in there. And it's short and sweet. Can't complain about that. Give it a PIBS.
Yeah, I'll give it a A. With the up and down line, not a complete A+, but very, very strong.
An A1.
Yeah, and we did have someone in the Discord asking me what's the difference between an A and an A1 and an A+.
It's pretty obvious if you ask me. I mean,
yeah.
Just look at it.
0.25%. Like, it's just a little bit of a step down. You got A+, you got A right in between, A1.
Okay, I'm not sure about the decimal on that, but yeah. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, that's fine.
So yeah, I'll rate this one on the scale of ice cream products. I'm gonna rate this one a hot fudge sundae. It's not quite a banana split, which I feel to be the premier sundae product, but it's definitely better than a dish of vanilla. So good job on this one. I think, you know, maybe something to help pin it down a little bit, just some kind of, I don't know, some kind of clue or something. But yeah,
like maybe the scientific Latin name or something like that. If it's not too obvious,
something, maybe there's some association with ladybugs in, you know, some stories or something you could tie in. But, you know, the spots, you know, I think, I could pick up on that, but they're red, right? So there was no like white there. So, you know, kind of Lee, I agree with you. I brought that up, but wasn't at all, you know, had no thunder on going with that just because of the spots. But so, yeah, I mean, good, tough question. And I liked it because when you hear the answer, you're like, yeah, okay, I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cochinellidae is the family, the scientific family that the ladybugs are part of.
That would have been a big help.
That might help because it's not too obvious, but I would have definitely been steered away from bees hearing that because,
yeah,
they are Avi is there.
I wouldn't have. I don't think that would have been a big help at all. Cochinellidae.
Well, you never know. All right. And then we heard from Taylor Rothenberg Manley. Taylor writes, heard this at Trivia Night here in Sarasota and loved it. Here's the question. in his 1989 obituary, which racing legend was survived by over 300 sons and daughters? In his 1989 obituary, which racing legend was survived by over 300 sons and daughters?
You said 1989?
Yep.
Okay. I like this question already.
Me too.
Me three.
And I don't think we'll get fooled again this time. Like the live birth question that we had as a Rate My Question a few weeks ago, and we did not realize that they were speaking of an animal, a giraffe. I think that this is not a human racer. I don't think
Dale
Earnhardt Sr. I mean, I know that that accident took place a few years after this anyway, but we're not talking about a NASCAR driver here.
It's going to be a horse.
That's what I was thinking. Seabiscuit? Sure.
I think Seabiscuit's older.
Yeah, Seabiscuit was like the 30s and 40s earlier even maybe.
So, I mean, you've got, I think in that era, I think Affirmed is the Triple Crown sort of, you know, horse. I think Affirmed won the Triple Crown like maybe in the 70s. I don't know how long horses live.
Me neither. I mean,
what was the other?
There
was
another. That doesn't seem reasonable, though.
There was another big crown winner right before. I think anything before Affirmed would be too old. What was the other one, though? There was another one that I'm not going to pull.
I really only know Seabiscuit because they made a movie. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Well, I'm not big on the races. I'm not sure about the other winners, but if they made some movies.
I'm gonna try and not be too meta here, but I'm gonna say this. I feel like 20% of people in the world know who Affirmed is. Seabiscuit's a much more well known, and though the timing doesn't seem right.
Maybe Seabiscuit.
I feel the play here is that you think when you hear racer, you think of a human. But it's like trying to trick you that way, and the answer is a guessable. Oh.
Secretariat's the only one, the other one, but I think Secretariat was Secretariat before or after Affirmed?
I think Secretariat was after Seabiscuit, right?
But I think before Affirmed. Wasn't Secretariat the one that was like 20 some lengths way out ahead? Like I get Affirmed and the other one mixed up. I need my friend here who writes in the horse racing industry.
I will say I've definitely heard of Secretariat, but I have not heard of Affirmed. I've heard of Seabiscuit and Secretariat. I've never heard the name Affirmed before. Not saying that they're not up there.
I'm pretty sure Affirmed was the last one. Did a recent horse win the Triple Crown? I can't remember. Either a more modern horse. I'm pretty sure Affirmed was post Secretariat.
I think Secretariat is a good middle guess. Seabiscuit is the obvious one. Secretariat is the answer that makes you go, oh, we forgot about Secretariat. And Affirmed, I don't know, again, and this is just based on like my own lack of recognition. I don't know that somebody would go, oh, that's interesting, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Secretariat and Affirmed may have been in the same era. I know there were a whole bunch, and then there's been a huge gap in time between the last Triple Crown winner and whatever. Again, I can't remember if there's been one in the past 10, 15 years or not. But I think Secretariat and Affirmed may be in the same era, but I don't know how long horses live.
Yeah.
You know,
but Secretariat is after Seabiscuit. We agree on that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think we should go with Secretariat.
Okay.
I agree.
And it's going to end up being Affirmed, and I'm going to eat my fucking words, but
we should know better at this point.
Lisa, or it could be Seabiscuit. You can throw shade at me if it's
Seabiscuit. One of them is from a long, long time ago.
And again, the only reason I would go with Affirmed is I really think Affirmed was later. But if Affirmed and Seabiscuit or Affirmed and Secretariat were close to the era, You know, I think they were both 70s. So say they're 3 year olds when they win, like in 73. I mean, it's conceivably a horse would live to 89.
Yeah, I know Secretariat, there's a thing with Secretariat being like related to Bojack Horseman, which would make me believe these.
I mean, I do agree Secretariat may be the better known name.
Do you have an answer?
Yeah, so let's go with that.
From the New York Times 1989 obituary, Secretariat, racing legend yes. and fan favorite, is dead, reads the headline.
All right.
So, yes. Ew. All Ew. Right.
Yeah, no shade all around.
Yeah, it was. I knew it was either the play was, you think of a human being racer, but then it ends up being an animal, and it's one that you know. Yeah. Or it's, you know, it's not a human. You just have to know that it's, you know, an animal. And I figured it was probably the former, like we got dumped with before with a live birth.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept trying to think, like, I knew there was the other famous horse before Affirmed. And I kept trying to think, and in my head I was saying Sagittarius. But I was saying Sagittarius. Like, no, that's not it.
No, you definitely pulled it, though. I mean, I would have probably landed on Seabiscuit for that one, but... Just thinking, oh yeah, horses probably live to be like 90. All right, I'm going to give this a similar rating to Mike's question. I'm going to give this a pips. I'm going to give it a middle in between a lowercase and uppercase B because it's the hint is not very strong as a hint, but it is a cool hint, which is the 300 sons and daughters thing, which if you're not paying attention to the question, you might, you know, there's definitely teams that listen to like the first half of a question and not the second half, and I feel like this one could get tricky in that regard. But yeah, I like this a lot. That is a great question.
Yeah, I'll give it an A+.
All right,
I like this because it does a little bit of trickery, but it's still guessable if you get your way out of like being inside your head thinking that has to be a human.
Mm-hmm. What's our ice cream style?
Yeah, I like this question a lot, too. And I liked it, you know, for similar reasons, because you had to know, obviously, it wasn't talking about a human. And once you went down to it's talking about a horse, then you have to go through your, you know, your Triple Crown history. So mm-hmm. I really liked that. If I was writing that question, I might say sports champion instead of racer. To Ooh. Even make it a little trickier. So I'm giving that one a banana split, but I'm withholding the cherry on top.
Oh.
Just because there's always room for improvement.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Thank you, but Taylor.
I liked it a lot.
Yes. And thank you, Taylor. Same. Thank you, Mike, for the questions. If you'd like to write us with a Rate My Question, a missed correction, or even just a little no-note, you can do so, Aerobase, no-nonsense trivia, aerobase@gmail.com, or call us at 1-929-356-6966.
Before we get started, I have to ask you, is scoop of vanilla ice cream the lowest on that rating?
Yeah, scoop of vanilla ice cream is the lowest. A single scoop. Then you move into the cones, a double... You know, a single scoop, double scoop, waffle cone mm-hmm. is good. Then yeah. you move into
the beginning hot fudge of the sundae.
Good. Yeah, then you move into the hot fudge sundae and banana splits.
That's interesting. What's your least favorite ice cream, Lee? What would be your bottom of that list?
Least favorite ice cream? It's not vanilla. I do enjoy vanilla ice cream.
I love a vanilla.
Yeah. Maybe
I like vanilla.
I don't know if chocolate. I've ever had it, but I got to imagine somebody's tried to put together like a licorice ice cream. That would not be a favorite of mine.
Boogers.
Well, I'm talking about like reasonable, like things that, you know, no crazy Harry Potter jelly beans or anything like that.
Fair enough. Lisa, you want to kick us off with our last round here?
Wait, Mark, okay. What's your least favorite flavor of ice cream? Is it boogers? Or do you like something?
If there is one.
else less.
I mean, I honestly don't really care much for chocolate ice cream. I like milk chocolate, like candy, but mm-hmm. I'm a vanilla guy and throw some stuff on there or whatever. I don't like pistachio ice cream.
I enjoy it.
Loves pistachio.
Have you ever had licorice ice cream? Lisa?
I've never even heard of it.
I wouldn't eat it because I do not at all care for licorice. Yeah.
I just have to imagine licorice? It exists.
Yeah. And actually, I probably, like those fake ice cream, ice milk varieties.
Oh, yeah.
That the would novelty be the treats. Scale. Yeah. That's the bottom.
I will say that licorice ice cream, I guess, if it was blackcurrant, would also be called anise ice cream or anus ice cream, which also sounds disgusting.
Oh, yeah. I just looked it up. There's tons of recipes and stuff for black licorice ice cream.
Okay.
Cinnamon ice cream is really good.
Ooh, yes. Yeah. That's with so apple good. Pie.
With apple pie, with all of the Thanksgiving type desserts.
Yes, so please. Good.
All right. Lisa, it's time. Kick us off with the last question.
So the last question is in entertainment.
Cool.
What former TV personality and longtime friend of Eddie Vedder inducted Pearl Jam into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
One
more time.
And I've left out a clue, so we'll see if you guys know this without the clue. What former TV personality and longtime friend of Eddie Vedder inducted Pearl Jam into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Mark, were Alex Trebek and Eddie Vedder friends?
Not that I know of.
That would be awesome. Would you think it's somebody that's maybe more of a peer?
I'll tell you, they were inducted the first year they were eligible.
Pearl Jam was.
You said TV personality?
Mm-hmm.
I said, what former TV personality and longtime friend of Eddie Vedder?
You know who I think would vibe with Eddie Vedder's politics pretty well?
Who's that?
John Stewart.
Interesting.
Former host of The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't been on TV. I mean, he's made a few appearances here and there. He showed up on Stephen Colbert's show when that first launched for a guest appearance. And he even made a Twitter and tweeted one or two things before ignoring it for months at a time. So he's been out of the limelight, and I can see him stepping in to, induct his friends in Pearl Jam, Eddie Vedder. Eddie Vedder has done a ton of concerts over the years, benefit concerts, benefit compilation albums. Their paths could cross at one of these. Maybe Jon Stewart is hosting a benefit concert in New York. And you didn't give the year, did you, Lisa? That's probably the hint that you're...
I can if you want.
Is that the clue that you're withholding?
No, but I can give you the year.
Sure.
2017.
Okay. Yep, so he would be former at that point. That's my guess, man. Jon Stewart. At first I was thinking Conan O'Brien, but he's back on off TV and on again, and I don't know about his politics, but Jon Stewart and Eddie Vedder are both on the left side of the spectrum.
What about David Letterman?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, Pearl Jam was on The Late Show a few times, weren't they?
David Letterman,
he's a big fan of the Foo Fighters, I know.
You ever seen that supercut of him complimenting drummers' drums? These drums, you rent these?
No, I haven't seen that.
Him talking to drummers at the end of shows.
Oh, it's like a supercut?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought he was just talking to Slipknot or something, because they have so many drums. A lot of drums you got here. Why'd you do this to me, man? Why'd you do this? I was all set on Jon Stewart. And now you've introduced doubt.
Sorry, bro.
So what do you think? You're leaning Letterman?
It's an idea, What do you think?
Well, I did say that Jon Stewart, might have crossed paths with Eddie Vedder at some of these benefit concerts and stuff, and maybe they've developed a friendship, but Letterman was super active on TV, mainly in the 90s, a little bit before then, but mainly through the 90s when Pearl Jam was on their up and up. So Letterman's like having them on his show at the beginning of their career, at the mid stage of their career. I won't say towards the end of their career, because Letterman has retired and they're still going.
2017, was he off the air by then?
I think so.
Was he former TV personality now or former TV personality then?
Then.
Okay. I mean, the way the question is written, it could work either way. Yeah.
Well, now definitely. I mean,
he had that show on Netflix, but that was like, that's like a mini series.
He's got a big old beard now.
That's always, man, when you see a TV show guy go off the air and then they grow that big beard, you know they're holding that back. Like, they're thinking about it. I'm going to grow that beard out so long.
God damn.
People are going to be like, are you in ZZ Top?
He grew that beard even before COVID.
Yep. I think I remember hearing an interview, like, he always wanted facial hair, but for whatever reason, you know, they didn't want him to have
CBS
it.
CBS executives? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
TV personality.
I like Letterman, man.
Well, you liked Stewart before.
Yeah, but I just explained why. I changed my answer because there's just more opportunities.
Thinking, is there anybody else out there it could be?
I'm sure there could be, but we've been on this for a few minutes now. No, it's not. I hope it's not Leno.
Let me tell you guys about this band I like.
Yeah. he likes a lot of stuff, but I'm not sure a lot of things like him.
You want to go with Letterman?
Yes.
We're going to go with David Letterman.
You are correct.
Yeah. Oh, I did it.
That's a sus.
And pretty much for a lot of the reasons that you know, you went through. Mm-hmm. Pearl Jam was on Letterman from the beginning. He formed a real close friendship with the band, you know, with Eddie Vedder. And Neil Young, I believe it was supposed to do the induction and he got sick. And so they asked Letterman to step in. And, you know, one of my favorite YouTube rabbit holes is Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions. And there are some that really stand out. And the one from Letterman, if you've not seen it, you know, just go on YouTube. It's there. It's fantastic. Because he talks about personal stories. It's when he first was able to leave his house after having that heart attack. You know, Eddie Vedder was one of the last, I think was the last musical act on the Late Show, you know, on the Late Show. And he tells this story where he gave, when Letterman's son was born, Eddie Vedder sent a guitar, a small guitar, saying, if you learn to play this, I will get you your next big guitar. So they've always had this close friendship. It's such a genuine, nice induction.
Man.
And it's, you know, there's a lot in that question. The clue I left out was saying the TV personality was a Hoosier, because Letterman's always, you know, talking about being from Indiana. But it's, you know, you guys sussed it exactly out from the minimal clues that were in there.
Good old Earl Hofert.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
All right. Great question.
Very.
So you said Pearl Jam filled in for Neil Young? That's how they got on? No,
Letterman filled in for Letterman Neil Young. No, Letterman
filled in for Neil Young. Neil Young was supposed to induct them.
They did Rockin' in the Free World together.
Right.
So,
and if you're going down that rabbit hole of Hall of Fame inductions, just the one of the absolute best is, believe it or not, Tom Morello inducting Kiss. It's fantastic. It is everything you would want in that kind of speech and the stories and the enthusiasm. It's fantastic. Kiss didn't play at that, but so the induction speech was a little longer than usual, but it's awesome. It's so good.
I almost asked a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction question this trivia too.
Okay.
Small world.
You still don't want to ask it? Or did you ask it on Wednesday?
No, I'm not going to now. I have another question I'm going to ask, and I wouldn't want to have two rock and roll induction questions for last question.
Oh, gotcha. All right.
Well, I'll leave it be for now.
And listeners, just as a heads up, you can find the videos to these inductions as well as anything else that we might have referenced in this episode in the show notes. So check that out, the episode show notes for 165, to find some links to videos of that. Save you some Googling. All right.
You?
Yep.
Or me.
My last question is about dangerous books. Dangerous books. I know you thought we already had our dangerous books question, but this book is even more dangerous. Just four copies remain of a toxic 1874 book by Michigan doctor Robert C. Kedzie, which contain 86 specimens of what? Just four copies remain of a toxic 1874 book by Michigan doctor Robert C. Kedzie, which contains 86 specimens of what?
Well, I have a direction to possibly go with this one. Because of Michigan, I think. If I'm thinking the right thing, I might be thinking Minnesota. Any ideas? Do you want to go first?
Oh, I thought you were. I mean, if you've got, got a place to go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna think that I'll just throw out as an idea here. I'll throw out mushrooms because I think isn't the biggest, hugest, like hundreds of miles or dozens of miles single fungus somewhere up in Michigan. I think maybe they've had a lot of species, and there are so many, and there are so many poisonous ones that's the rabbit hole I'm going down on this one.
That sounds good to me. That makes a lot of sense. I was trying to think if it might be like something like a book that contains specimens.
Like, I did this trivia. I wrote this round of trivia once where it was a visual round, and it was U-Haul trucks from, you know, they have the different state things on the U-Haul trucks, except I redacted anything that actually referenced a state. Oh. And I think the That's Michigan one was like, it was really fun. And I think the one from Michigan was like a giant fungus. It's the only reason that came to my mind. I mean, the other things you got are like diseases, bugs.
I was thinking like maybe venoms or poisons.
Poisons. Like,
but those seem pretty. Those seem pretty obvious. Let's go with fungi. I think All right. We should do that. We're gonna say fungi.
Wrong. No, I'm sorry. That's incorrect. The name
sounded good, though.
The name of the book is, and I thought about including this in the question, and you might want to include this if you want to make it a little bit easier, but this might get some pushback, you know, for including the answer in the question. The name of the book is Shadows from the Walls of Death, and it is a collection of 86 specimens of wallpaper that were commonly used that contained arsenic. So this guy collected all of these dangerous wallpapers into a book and sent them to sent over 100 copies to libraries across the United States as like, I don't know, a form of protest or scientific. This is like crazy 19th century American doctor shit. Like, it would be illegal to do this today. You get locked up if you did it. But yeah, arsenic laced wallpaper designed to show how dangerous these wallpapers were. From Wikipedia, the book warns of the dangers of then commonly used arsenic pigmented wallpaper. Due to the dangerous amount of arsenic in the work, of the original 100 copies, only 4 have survived. Most copies were destroyed by the recipient libraries. These are only handled using special precautions for safety. As of 2021, the remaining copies were held at Harvard University Medical School, the U.S. National Library of Medicine in Bethesda, Maryland, and the University Libraries of Michigan State University, as well as the University of Michigan. The copy in the National Library of Medicine has been digitized and is freely available, so you can take a look at it. It's actually quite a beautiful book, if you can believe it or not, because it is a bunch of wallpaper designs that are all kind of like this green tinge. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes if you want to check it out. You will not be able to, you know, be poisoned from arsenic through the internet, so don't worry about that. And if you want to go look at these at the special collections libraries in Michigan, they have them. You can actually turn the pages yourself. All the pages are behind plastic sleeves, so you can safely browse.
I love that question. That is just such an off-the-wall question.
Yeah.
It really is.
I almost asked about, there is a library, I think in Denmark, who they found three green colored covers of books in their library and found that the green paint that was used on the outside was laced with arsenic. Probably, they think, to as like a pest control management system at some point in like the 18th century or something like that. But once I went through that question and found my way to this doctor from Michigan, I was like, ooh, this is juicy.
That was fun.
Thank you.
Because there's so many ways to be wrong on that one. Mm-hmm. And then when you hear the answer, you're like, what kind of psycho does that?
Right.
Trying to think of how you would get even something like venom or poison or even something like a mushroom in a book seemed very hard. That makes so much sense, yep, having it be wallpaper. All right, here's your last question from me. Invented by the journalist Arthur Wynn, the first word cross appeared in the New York World in what decade? Invented by the journalist Arthur Wynn, that's Wynne, the first word cross appeared in the New York World newspaper in what decade?
Wow.
I think the New York World was really early. I think that's one of the initial 19th century papers, mm-hmm, early.
What's throwing me off here is that Mark did not ask what century. He asked what decade. And it's like, that's just so many decades when you go back that far. Now we've got, 20, 30, how many years or decades?
10.
Since the 18th century?
No, in the 19th century.
Oh, 19th century.
I don't know if it's
I was thinking late
18th century.
I was thinking it could be like late 18th century, like the 1790s, maybe a start, because that's around the time when printing kind of took off, right? I mean, 18th century is close enough.
I mean, I recently heard a question, mm-hmm, about an early New York newspaper that was 18th century, but that wasn't the name of it.
Yeah.
That's not to say there wasn't another one.
Yeah, I think it was smaller publishing houses, like Franklin had his shop going in Philadelphia, but they weren't doing like newspapers. They were doing like pamphlets and stuff like that. So maybe you're right. Maybe going a little later for a newspaper.
I'd be inclined to say early first half of the 19th century for no particular reason. Other than, and I was just reading something about the New York World, but glossed over the years.
Mm.
But I think I would be more inclined to say that the New York papers like that started early 19th century. But hey, I was super confident on the last question too.
Yeah. So a word search is much more simple to design than a crossword puzzle. So it would make sense that that would come a little early. People are just getting bored with the news already. Let's put a game in there. A word search.
Because the news is so entertaining without it. I might say like
1850s?
I think earlier than that, because I think the New York Times is earlier. It was the New York Star, the New York World, as the early ones. I mean, I might say like 1820s.
Sure. I think it's such a wide potential series of answers. 1820s versus 1830s is not.
Is there any answer that would be a more satisfying answer than another one? Like, is there any reason that you know, turn of the century might be a cool answer. Like sometimes if for questions like this, mm-hmm. if there's no knowledge to base the answer on and you're picking a decade, like does any decade just fit any better than another one?
1821 would be the 200th anniversary of the word search, right? If it was, like, that could be popping up in the news. Mark does like word searches. I remember back in the day that he would, like, we would go out to eat dinner after like a concert. Mark would play drums and then we'd go to Steak and Shake for like 5 hours, have his word search book.
I love him.
Folded up.
Don't have much time for him, but I do him whenever I go on vacation.
Mm-hmm. 1820s, 200-year anniversary. I like it.
Let's go for it. Let's go for it.
1820s.
Sorry, that's incorrect.
We did what we could.
January 1914.
Oh, that's later than we expected.
Okay,
the first one actually ran in New York World newspaper December 21st, 1913, but was called Word Cross. As a noun in 1925, short for a crossword puzzle.
Wait, word cross? Is that what you said?
It was originally called the word cross.
I thought you said word search. First...
No.
God.
Would that have made a difference?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would have made a little bit of a difference because, like I was saying, the word search is so simple, whereas a crossword would be more advanced. So
I just had no frame of reference either way around.
Oh, well, I mean... That was a tough one to pinpoint for sure.
We named a decade.
We did our due diligence at least that far.
We did. And you were almost right, just almost 100 years off.
Yeah. 1820s, almost 1910s.
All right. But there was no order of magnitude on that leeway, was there?
No.
No. Okay.
Leeway.
Lisa, thank you so much for gracing our show with your presence, your victorious presence, our number 3 on the Twitch channel in both terms of wins and teams defeated, coming in clutch on several questions, bringing great questions. Mm-hmm. What a great episode. Thank you so much, Lisa.
This was really fun. I enjoy playing your trivia, and thank you, Mark, for keeping the online presence of your pizza of your nice guys trivia.
Well, I'm do it in large part for you and your team. We love having you.
All right. That does it for this week's episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No in several ways. The easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You could also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform, and you can support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page.
Thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show, including some new Rumple Snail Skins, Aaron, Aaron, and Laurel. Thank you guys so much for your support. And also, of course, including our quiz daddies, Issa, Adam Volk from Esme and Red Crest Fried Chicken, Tim at Pat's Garden Service, and Tommy of the Electric Mud. Our team captains, Rick G, Skylar, Kristen, Fletcher, Dylan, Rachel, Jenny, Lydia, Sean, OG Aaron, David Holbrook, and Gil.
It's Gil. Gil.
Thanks to our proverbial lightkeepers, Kate, Rachel, Moo, Tim Gomez, a.k.a. Mappy1984, Lucas, Carly, Sarah, Cooper, Justin, Hank, Luke, Manu, Matthew, Mo, Spencer, Lisa, Ryan, Adam, John Lewis, Nabil, and Ricky F. And thanks to our Rumple Snailskins, Aaron, H-Bomb, Lauren, MJ, Steven, Kenya, We Do Stuff, Allison, Paige, Kevin, Sarah, Douglas, Alex, Mike C.
Mike Cross Search. Is it Cross Search?
No, Word Cross.
Word Cross. Oh, that doesn't even make sense.
You'll get
Mike Cow of God.
Mike J.
Mike Journalist putting the crosswords in the paper.
Mike Jumps, comma, Base. And Mike K.
Mike 1914. Silent K. If you'd like to write us with a rate my question or miscorrection, you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or call us at 1-929-356-6966. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia, on Twitter at No Non Trivia, and on our Discord channel as well.
We have a Facebook group you can join. Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there. Lisa shows up there occasionally. We have many other guests that we've had on in the past show up, so you can hang out and talk with us and talk shit or whatever. And finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service.
Five stars only, please. Until next time, No Nonsense listeners.
Have a great week.